Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Friday, actually Saturday on my podcast, I had Jay Gruden on, late Friday. And it was, you know, where we have a chance to recap the game almost instantaneously. So I asked our former coach, the former coach of the Washington Redskins, just to kind of sum up Thursday night's loss in Green Bay to get started.
Yeah, it wasn't good. You know, anytime you look at the stat sheet, you see Jaden with 40-plus pass attempts and only about 7 rushing attempts for the team. It's not going to be good.
You know what? That's a great place to start. Tell me what you thought of Cliff Kingsbury's, you know, game, the game that he called.
Well, I mean, it's easy to say it wasn't very good now. You know, they were 3 for 16 on third down. I mean, there's 1 for 3 on fourth down. The critical situations, the critical plays, they did not make. And you know, they didn't really give Jaden a chance to really succeed. And it was a tough game. You know, the protection wasn't very good. The run game was awful. And it's tough to get a rhythm going as a play caller when you can't really run the ball. It takes away your play action and your shot plays, and then you become one dimensional. It's tough for any coordinator. And it just was that type of night.
The score was the game felt out of control, but the score was never out of control until the very end. And you hit on it, and I talked about this. The running backs in the game had 12 carries. There were 48 called pass plays in the game. Do you think that he should have given the run game more of an opportunity?
Yeah, you have to, especially on the road. You know, you control the clock a little bit, but I don't know if he had confidence in moving that front for Green Bay. You know, I think maybe he tried a couple early and saw there was no movement, so he put the ball in Jaden's hands, which you can't argue that point. But yeah, you just have to take some pressure off Jaden. He can't drop back and throw because the protection's not good enough. You know, the offensive line's not good enough to protect against any team, let alone the Packers and Micah and all those guys. So, yeah, you have to offset it with some run plays, and even if some quarterback design runs, anything to just try to get the chains moving another way.
Yeah, you know, the game last night was really kind of a first, maybe the Philly game on the road last year on Thursday night, where, you know, the protection wasn't good, the running game wasn't there, but Jaden typically has put on a cape and become Superman and just he's made plays. He didn't make any last night, really. Why was that?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. I think Green Bay did a really good job with their rush integrity, and they did a great job in the secondary. You know, they really clamped down the receivers. Not a lot of separation for the receiving core. You know, that was a little disappointing. You know, so I don't know. I got to go back and watch the film and look at the pass game concept and see what happened there. But it just, to me, looking at it from on TV on this Amazon crap, it just didn't look like he had anywhere to go, running lanes or guys that were creating separation in the passing game. So they just bottled up the offense. And it's, you know, it's a short week. It's tough. It's on the road. It's never easy to come up with a great game plan on a Thursday night on the road, especially against a really good defense. So let's just chalk that up to early in the season. Thursday night games are never really good.
They played mostly zone, it appeared, in watching it on TV, Green Bay did. Doesn't that more often than not at least lead to, hey, we can get the ball out of his hands quickly on something super short?
Yeah, a lot of times you can, you know, hit a flat route or a stick route, some stick flat, quick combinations to try to get, you know, sometimes if you can't run the ball, there's some elements to a quick game that you can get, you know, 5 or 6 yards on first down, which opens up play action and other things you can do. So they just really couldn't get anything going. It was really odd to see the lack of production on offense and separation from the receivers. And, you know, you think you get Terry McLaurin something on a slant or a quick out or something like that, but nothing was there for him. Nothing was really happening.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. It looked like he didn't have anywhere to go with it, and then when he was looking to try to make a play, there wasn't anywhere to go either. I mean, I guess you just chalk it up, like you said, short turnaround, but an excellent defensive football team that they faced last night.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you got to be concerned moving forward about this offensive line play. I don't really see a lot of movement, a lot of physicality with them. You know, they've shuffled so many parts. You know, Tunsil coming in at left tackle and then moving Coleman to left guard. And, you know, the right tackle, left tackle in college. I don't know. It's going to take some time for this offensive line to gel. I don't know what they're going to do about it. They're just not very good right now playing together.
Connerly Jr. really struggled. Would you consider moving Wiley to right tackle, which is where he's played, and get a veteran in there?
I thought Wiley did a pretty good job last year, really. I don't know why the sudden change, but I know Connerly's got probably more talent, physical talent than Wiley. I think he's better outside than he is inside. He's not a very physical guy to play guard for me, but I would look to do that because he struggled against the Giants too. Now, it wasn't like he had a perfect game against the Giants, and he's played two really good defenses. I get it, but there's other defensive ends that can rush. I just don't know if he's ready for right tackle yet. I think it's going to be some time.
On a night like last night, when you've been the play caller and you had a plan, and let's just say it was kind of a limited plan because of the turnaround, but when you have a plan and nothing's working, how much do you change in the midst of the game, adjust, as you know, fans say, how about the adjustments? Where are the adjustments? Like, how hard is it? How easy is it? What's the process of saying nothing we're doing is working? We got to change everything.
It's hard. You know, the biggest thing, you got to try to figure out a way to try to get some chunk plays somehow, some way. And that's the biggest issue you have because obviously, without the running game and the pass protection is not very good, you got to figure out a way to get Jaden outside the pocket, try to get some deep three-level throws, something like that. You know, when we beat Seattle, we had no running game, and couldn't throw the ball, couldn't protect. You know, we hit a chunk play to Josh Doctson or Brian Quick or something like
right.
that.
Right, Quick.
Go on. But it's very, very difficult. That's the most important thing you try to do. You say, oh, chunk plays take a long time. We can't protect. So how can we do it? You got to try to get some max protection, get him outside the pocket. And I think moving forward, I'd like to see them try to get Jaden outside the pocket on some bootlegs and things of that nature so he can see and then use his legs as athleticism, not so much being in the pocket on every drop back. That's tough on any quarterback.
We haven't had much to, you know, constructively critique when it's come to Jaden Daniels over his first now 22 games, if you include the playoff games. But last year, I remember mentioning this to you, and then his quarterback coach, the guy that works with him out in California, came on and said that he, in some of the zone reads, he's not making consistently good decisions. There was one in the Giant game where he kept it where it looked like the end was playing him. Last night, the end crashed, and he should have pulled it, it looked like. Have you noticed that again this year?
Yeah, a couple times. Those things are hard, man. You got to get the snap. You got to ride the back and the belly, and your eyes are out there at that defensive end, and they get tricky. And he's got such great athleticism. Sometimes when he keeps it, he thinks he can outrun a guy, even if he's playing the zone read, even if he's playing the quarterback, he can outrun him, and he usually does. But that's an issue sometimes. That's such a bang bang type play, man. That's not easy.
There's Jay Gruden with me on my podcast that aired over the weekend. We actually recorded it late Friday. And, I think, and I'm going to talk about this when we come back, I think after watching this game, all 22 style, I think a lot of what we talked about on Friday morning was definitely true. And I think some of it may have been exaggerated. I'll share which parts were exaggerated when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, The Team 980 and the team980.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Time to head out to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We say good morning to our weekly guest during Commanders season. Von Miller, Commanders edge rusher, joins the Junks.
What's up, Von?
Good morning, Von.
Howdy, guys. Good morning.
There's your song. We got your walk-up song.
Yeah, I heard it. It was good.
There you go, bro. This is obviously a pretty challenging week for the team after what happened Thursday. And, man, I felt so bad for obviously Eckler. But Dietrich Wise, I mean, I just felt so bad for him. But to lose two starters in the same game for the year, I mean, that just doesn't happen a lot. How are you feeling about losing those guys?
Man, yeah, I mean, if you ask me, I've had experience, with that, and it's always tough.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you do better than anything else in the world. Like we play football, of course, fathers, and we do other things in life, but this is what we were born to do. And so to have that, taken away from you is tough. And we lost two good soldiers. Eckler's a great player. Cornerstone for the team, and so was D. Wise, man. And those guys do everything right. They do everything right. They're some of the first guys in the facility, and some of the last guys to leave all the time. So
mm-hmm.
Von, cornerstone pieces, man.
Yeah, what's that like mentally for you and your teammates when these guys are getting taken away on a cart? It's a serious injury, and then 2 or 3 minutes later, you guys are back to playing NFL football. Like, how do you flip that switch? I guess, like you said, you've seen it before. You just have to move on and process it.
Yeah, you said it. You just gotta move on, man. And you can't replace those guys, but you just gotta find a way to just take the next step. And it's tough. It's emotional, especially I'm really good friends with D. Wise, and I've known Austin for a long time too. So. Really good friends with those guys. It's an emotional element of it too. You just gotta keep going.
So Von, we were talking this morning about Jaden's status and his style of play. Mina Kimes from ESPN said maybe he's going to need to change his style of play. You just played in Buffalo with Josh Allen, totally different body type, bigger guy than Jaden Daniels, but also a guy who absorbs a lot of hits. I'm wondering, when you were in Buffalo, did people talk about him changing his style of play? And what is your take on Jaden?
It's crazy. You talk about style of play. I mean, he didn't do anything on that play. He was just running to the left, and he's trying to cross the line. I think it was like he got a 3-yard gain on that play. It's not like he was running wild left to right like Tim Tebow used to do. It wasn't nothing like that. He just that's just part of the game, and especially when you get a star player get banged up, man, it's always tough. And they tried to make that conversation happen with Josh, but Josh is just he just has his own playing style, and he wasn't changing it for nobody. And we noticed that early on. He'll slide here and there, but that's just how Josh gets down, man.
Right, and Jaden. I mean, that's part of Jaden's strength, is getting out of the pocket and running. I mean, he had 850 yards rushing last year and seven or eight touchdowns. That's, you can't take that away.
No, you can't take that away. And he does it. He does it at the, from a defensive perspective, he does it at the worst times that you could possibly imagine for a defense. And he gets first down here, first down there. 800 yards for a quarterback is insane.
So, right.
That's just part of how he gets down too, and that's you know, that's a weapon and a strength of ours.
So, Vaughn, in your career, you've had some knee issues. You've torn your ACL. You've had meniscus tear, MCL sprain. What's it like when it's a more minor injury? Let's say that you sprain your MCL, battling with kind of the doctors, what they want versus you and your competitive spirit wanting to get back on the field.
You know, for me, I early in the career, early in my career, I feel like you should take as much time as possible. You know, it was harder, you know, to take all that time. You know, when you're 13, you're 14, like it's just harder because you don't know how many years you're going to play. So it depends on, you know, where you're at in your career and how many years, you know, where you fall in that spectrum.
How tough is it, especially as a an older guy, an older vet, to come back and play, you know, 3 days later on a Thursday night?
It's obvious that it's a challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I said earlier, this is what we've been doing our whole entire life. Like, it's not like, you know, it can't be done. Like, and you know, every team does it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like it's something crazy, but it, obviously it's a challenge to get, you know, the body ready to go on Thursday, but it's something that we do. Like, we can roll out of bed and play football, you know, but it's definitely a challenge, but you know, it can be done.
So let's go back to that Thursday night game. What challenges did the Packers offense present to you? Because they seem to be clicking.
Yeah. I mean, first and foremost, they got a good team. Yeah. They got a really good team. They've had a good team for a long time. You know, we played a really good team week two. It was a good test for us. You know, and despite all of that, you know, despite, you know, them clicking and having success, you know, we still had a chance, you know, to bring the game close, and we still had a chance to make the game very competitive at the beginning of the fourth quarter. You know, the offense had just scored. I think it was 10-17. You know, their offense gets the ball back, and all we need is a stop, and we get our offense back the ball back. So, you know, we had our moments in that game to make it a little bit more, challenging, and opportunities to bring the game a little bit closer. We just weren't able to do it. And, you know, a loss here and there is really good medicine, in my opinion. You know, I've been on teams that when I first got to Buffalo, I think we lost week three, and everybody was so bummed and heartbroken because they thought that we was going to go undefeated and win every game in the season. So, I've been on teams where it's just like, you know, that's the expectation, is to win every game. But the reality of it is, like, you know, those things are going to happen. You know, you just got to be able to change some games together late in the season and to get it done.
We're joined by Vaughn Miller from the Commanders on the Rude Guest Hotline. Getting back to that Packers game for a second, I was unaware that Jordan Love had that truck stick in him that he brought to Amos when he got out of the pocket. Were you surprised by that? By the physicality of Jordan Love in that game?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise for everybody. I think it was a surprise for Amos too. You know, when you get guys on the sideline like that, that's a weird place, you know, to try to tackle a quarterback during the game, because you don't know if they're gonna run out, you don't know if they're gonna try to step in, you don't know if they're gonna tightrope to the very last minute and then step out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a weird place.
Yeah, how do you balance that? Because going back to week one, Mahomes was running to the sideline, and the defender pulled up, and then he just
kept going.
He plowed him because I'm sure the defender, like you're mentioning, like
probably thought he was going to go out of bounds.
I'm going to get a flag if I hit Mahomes here. I'm sure that's running through your head too.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, that is a weird place on the football field to tackle a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they keep going, and at the last minute they step out. And if you go all the way through and you try to run through them and they step out, then that's a 15-yard penalty. So, you know, that's a weird place for a defender to try to tackle a quarterback.
Hey, Vaughn, the guy that kind of killed you guys on Thursday was Tucker Kraft, their tight end, and he's good. He's a good player. But he had 6 catches for a 124 and a score. 57-yarder was his long. I don't know how many plays you were on the field when he had those 6 catches, but why was he so wide open? It seemed like he was wide open all night. Were there busted coverages there, or what happened?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I love Tuck. That's one of my favorite players in the league, and we switched jerseys after the game. Like, that's one of my guys. But it's not like he was just like killing guys one on one routes and getting open. Like, he was in the middle
scheme
of the zone.
Yeah.
It was middle of the zones, or like, you know, he was wide open on plays, and he was able to just, you know, break a tackle here, and now he's going for 40 yards. So, you know, it's just things that we got to tighten up defensively. He did break, you know, a couple of tackles and extend the plays, though. Like, he did have a great game. But those big pass plays that he was able to get, he was just in a
– He's a big dude, zone. Man. He's a big dude.
Why is he one of your guys? What's the connection between Von Miller and Tucker Kraft?
The NFLPA golf tournament.
Golf tournament.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
What kind of game do you have as a golfer?
Man, I'm up and down. I'm really up and down. I really don't play that much during the season. I just try to put all my focus in on, you know, being the best swell player I could possibly be. But if we get breaks like we just had these last 3 days, you know, I'll go and play a little bit. But that's not enough to, like, stay on top of the game. But in the off season, I'm a little bit better. During the season, I'm terrible.
Do you live in Texas in the off season?
Yes, sir. Yeah. I'm in Dallas, Texas.
So you play down there all the time.
What's the handicap?
I mean, I got it down to a 16 this last off season.
All right, there you go.
Yeah,
nice going. Job. Hey, when you play on a Thursday, how much NFL football do you watch if you're not playing on a Sunday?
I'll see every single game.
Oh, really?
I'm a sports junkie.
Perfect fit.
I see every single game. I see every single play. Football is my life, man. I love everything about it, top to bottom. Games, watching games, playing in games, practice, joint practice, anything involved with the NFL, I love it, man.
Are you a fantasy football dork like all the other guys here that you're talking to, or no? Is that where you draw the line?
No, I'm not. I haven't played fantasy football in my 15-year career.
You play real football because you're a real man.
I got to tell you, don't start because it's addicting.
what'd you think of the end of the Broncos game? How frustrating would that be for you where the Colts line up, 60-yard field goal, and then there's a leverage call which gives them a second shot at it, and Denver ends up losing?
Yeah,
I mean, that's tough, man. And I think I saw like a little news clip. I didn't really get into it with Sean Payton. He took the blame for that. I'm not sure what Sean did, but you know, that's when you give a team a second chance to win. We lost to the Broncos like that a couple years ago. I think in 2023, we had too many men on the field for game winning field goal, and they missed it. Uh-huh. And they got a chance to retry, and then they won it. That was my first time playing the Denver Broncos since I had left. So
that's brutal.
You know, at the end of the day, those moments are what. No matter how bad they suck, those moments here and there in National Football League, they make the game great. They make viewership run so high. They make, you know, make these headlines and guys will talk about it. You know, the refs calling the flag here and there. Like, that's just part of the game, man, and it makes football what it is.
Talking to Von Miller, edge rusher for the Commanders, at a half sack against the Packers. Just quickly before we dive into your matchup against the Raiders, another one of these big issues is the tush push. In the Chiefs-Eagles game, they ran that play 11% of the offensive plays. Would you want that play banned? It's not fun to watch as a fan.
No, it's not fun to watch. And I think you know, every team has their, you know, their own variation, you know, of it, or you know, they can try to do it. But obviously, the Eagles are the best at it. And when you got to score points, if you're able to score points and you know, get them out of that. You know, that would be my assessment on how to get away from that play. If it's a tight game, then obviously they can just run that play like up and down the field. But if you're able to score points like the Chiefs normally are able to do, and you're able to get some extension away from those guys, you know, they'll get away from that tush push. And you know, the Cowboys, when they play the Cowboys, we won.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Cowboys are able to get a little bit of extension, and you didn't see that play till you know really late in the game. So you gotta be able to create some extension.
Have you sacked Geno Smith before?
I don't think I have.
All right, you got to add it to your list.
It's been a lot of guys. I don't know if I have, but yeah, I watched that game last night too.
Oh wow!
And you know, three picks, man. That created a tough game early. You know, I expect the Raiders to come in here like a wounded dog, man, ready and thirsty for a win, and we're gonna get their best shot.
Well, you guys are a wounded dog too. We gotta get that win, yeah. Bro.
All right, Von, we know you got to run.
It's a dog fight.
All right.
Von, don't think that we haven't forgotten about putting our order together for Greener Pastures Chicken. You're going to get that order. It's coming, and it's going to be a big one.
Yeah, I appreciate you, man. I just got to check with the guys, man. I forgot to get your your address and stuff too, so I can send you all some merch and some gear.
We'll be sure to get that.
Oh, we get some merch.
Yeah, of course.
Love that.
Be rocking that green hat that I see him wearing in all the pressers.
You just let us know.
Yeah. All right, Vaughn. Thanks again, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week, and best of luck against the Raiders.
Hey, I appreciate you guys, man. Thank you for everything.
All right,
yeah,
bro.
Man, of course. It's Vaughn Miller, Commander's Edge Rusher on the Rude Guest Hotline. When we come back, we're going to give you a chance to win a pair of tickets to go see Adam Sandler when he brings his tour to Capital One Arena at the end of September. So keep listening for your chance to win.
Be Mitch and Finley. 106.7 The Fan. We are really excited to get on the Rude Guest Hotline and welcome in Mr. John Bates, tight end for the Washington Commanders. John, what's up, dude? How are you?
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, guys. Doing good. How about you?
We're good, man.
Thank you for making time. We're excited to be talking to you this season. Have you ever done stuff like this where you do like a weekly radio thing?
No, I haven't, but I'm excited to get to do it this year and maybe chat a little bit about ball with you guys.
Oh, yeah. Definitely, man. Definitely.
We are here for that. Did you watch the Monday night doubleheader last night?
I caught the first game. Second game's too late. I'm kind of a old man. I got two kids now. I can't stay up too late to watch those late night games anymore.
Yeah, I know. So I say you're old, bro. I go catch up with you real quick.
Yeah, exactly. caught the first one. That was a crazy first game. Yeah.
What'd you think of that drive at the end for Tampa and what Baker got done there?
Impressive, man. I mean, I think everyone kind of knows Baker's just like one of those gamers, dude. Like, he's a hardcore competitor, and he's going to go out there and put it all on the line for his team and his boys. And he, came up with a couple of big plays last night. And obviously they sealed the deal out there at the end. So, that was really cool to see him do what he does.
Yeah, and people look at you, they talk a lot about how you block, your blocking. And Dennis Rodman in basketball, all he cared about, rebounds. What in your mindset makes you be so happy about going out there and blocking as well as you do?
Yeah. Obviously, I take a tremendous amount of pride in it, but I think obviously it's not something that necessarily shows up on the stat sheet. But I think as like a true football player and people who are in the building and understand how offenses go and how, you know, this whole team thing works, I think a lot of people see what big of a deal it is for, you know, someone to go in there and block the way that the O-line and I do and, you know, help our team out. And so I think it's just kind of one of those things that maybe not very many people from the outside looking in appreciate, but I know it's well appreciated inside the building.
When you get that contract extension, it tells you it's well appreciated.
Yeah.
Right?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, no, definitely. That was super exciting process for me, and to be able to come back here and just kind of go through all the ups and downs that this organization has been through in my time here. And it was important for me and my family to, you know, try to find a way to end up back here. And so, it was really cool. Appreciate everything that they've done for me and my family.
So, dude, I remember when you were drafted back in 21, I remember watching training camp that year and saying to a member of the coaching staff then, I was like, that rookie's going to have a 10-year career. Like, you just immediately got it. Where did that come from to make the transition from Boise to the NFL and really – like hit the ground running like that?
Yeah. To be honest, I think it really kind of comes back from my days at Boise State. We're not necessarily the biggest, most shiniest team, but
I learned from coaches there and players above me what it looks like to develop over, a span of 4 or 5 years. And I was around a lot of coaches who knew a lot about ball. And fortunately enough, I was in an offense that required the tight end position to know a ton, kind of like, an NFL system. And so I think just having that experience and those people around me from an early age and just experiencing that for my 5 years at Boise State really just helped me transition into the NFL because, quite honestly, like the work and stuff I was putting into the playbook and stuff was just as similar in college as it was in the NFL. And so it wasn't anything new for me. I knew I was going to have to, put a lot of time and effort into it at first and pick up on it. But, at the end of the day, they kind of helped mold me into figuring all that stuff out fast.
John, you all had a terrific year last year, and I know people, even the coaches say, what happened last year happened last year. You got to come into it this year. What are the similarities for the team this year you're seeing, and what has been different?
I think similarity-wise, I think it's been cool seeing everyone kind of on the same page and everyone buying in again. Mm-hmm. I know in a lot of cases it can be easy for players to buy into new coaching staff and stuff in year one. Pretty easily because guys want change. But even, after what we did last year, what we accomplished, I think we still have a group of guys who are committed to, our standards and our goals and want to do even better than last year. And then what's different? I think what's different is I think we have a lot of veteran players back. But I think we have a lot of guys that – are stepping into like leadership roles in year two and really just, everyone's got a whole year underneath their belt, the system and like what we're trying to accomplish. And so, it's been nice having that familiarity going into year two, guys understanding. And so there's not really any setbacks when anyone new comes in the building and how we do stuff. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, we're just starting from where we left off last year. So that's been really nice.
Talking with Commanders tight end John Bates here on the Rude Guest Hotline. John's going to be joining us all year. We are very excited about that. John, obviously a tough result in Green Bay, and you go down pretty early in that game. How frustrating is it when you get injured and then your team, you want to be out there as things aren't going your way?
Yeah, it's obviously very frustrating. Especially when you're doing all the right things, and taking care of your body, putting the right stuff in your body with your food, diet, treatments, rehab, all that stuff. That's probably just the most, frustrating part of the whole thing is when you're doing all the things that you're supposed to do and stuff like that happens, which is a bummer. And then, obviously I want to do anything possible to be out there to, help the guys and help our team win. And so, things didn't go our way. Thursday night, but we have a strong, resilient group that's been through adversity before. And so, I know that we'll learn a lot from this game quickly and move forward to the Vegas.
How big has it been having guys like, you have so many veteran guys that, we got guys on the team that we feel going to be walking into the Hall of Fame, and Von Miller. Also, you have Bobby Wagner. Having Ertz. Those guys on the other side, Zach Ertz, in your room, you have Zach Ertz. But those guys on the other side to not only tell you all how to get over the hump sometimes, but can educate you on defense and what they're trying to do to you.
Yeah, I know. It's been super. Those guys have seen a ton of ball and have a ton of experience and a ton of just gameplay feel. And so it's been really great just having, obviously Zach in our room and some other guys on the offense and then guys on the defense too that you can pick your brain. I know a guy for me that I use a lot on the defensive side was Dietrich Wise, just because, he's kind of a run stopper. And so he's kind of looking for what I'm trying to do against guys like him and vice versa. And so he's a guy that I picked his brain a lot and he picked mine and just what we were trying to do and see. But it makes a tremendous difference because then it becomes the game within the game. Yes. And when you got a lot of guys like that have played at a high level for a long time, it helps bring up everyone and make everyone better.
We know you're dealing with the injury. DQ said probably a long shot for you to get back on the field this week. What is it like for you going through a week where the finish line is probably, you know, 2 weeks out?
Yeah, obviously it's a weird thing, but at the end of the day, like, I can control what I can control. And so it's just kind of putting my head down and working my tail off in the, you know, the weight room and the recovery room, and just trying to do everything I can possibly do to get myself out there as fast as possible.
Yeah. And then what's it like when you see Jaden getting knocked around in that Packers game? And obviously there were a ton of injuries. You mentioned Wise, Eckler, Noah, but when Jaden pops up grabbing that knee, do you freak out in the moment, or do you just kind of keep it cool because you understand what pro football is like?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough when you have a guy like that. You know, you see the little bit of, you know, whatever happened to his knee there. Obviously, it's pro football and stuff happens, so you don't want to freak out because it's not the end of the world. But you definitely don't want a guy like that to go down, you know. Yeah. I'm not sure what, you know, his status is moving forward, but, you know, whoever's going to be out there, we're going to have full trust in, and it's going to be a good situation, so. Should be good.
I feel like I hear a little one in the background there. How old are the kids? I know you just had a baby this summer, I think, right?
Yeah. I got a little girl that'll be 2 in November. I literally got back 3 minutes before I started this from ballet class with her.
So I love
and
that.
And then
enjoy those moments, dog.
Boy. So we stay busy, especially on off days. We're in there doing recovery, rehab, all that stuff, treatment, and then straight to the dad life. So it doesn't stop, yeah. But it's well worth it.
Oh, it is. Believe me, mine are in their 20s and 30s, and those moments go quick. So make sure you enjoy them all as they happen, dog.
Most definitely.
Yeah. John, we know your skills as a blocker. How are you as a ballerina?
Not too bad. I can move a little bit. Got some athleticism to me, so that helps me. But yeah, not too bad. I think my wife would maybe disagree, but my daughter thinks I'm cool, so we'll rock with that.
That's all that matters.
Exactly.
Dude, thank you very much for the time. Looking
Appreciate
forward
you,
to doing it every week, man. Thank you. Rest up.
Yeah, thank you guys. Appreciate it.
All right, man. All right. Take care, brother.
Commanders tight end, John Bates. Really, really good dude. I love hearing the little kids in the background.
Oh, yeah.
Tuesdays are the
They don't care
day.
What you're doing.
No.
It's dad time. Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. Thank you to John. Looking forward to keep that going.
Yes.
Nobody go anywhere. You're listening to B. Mitch and Finley.
McKenzie, last night was a slog. I mean, you pitched really well, 5 2/3 scoreless innings, but it was cold, it was wet, it was windy. There weren't a lot of people in the stands. Kind of a bring-your-own-energy night, huh?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like you said, you know, bring some energy. I mean, it's still a big league game, so there's still, you know, there's a lot on the line, and you're playing a really good lineup, and Chris Sale's pitching, so you have a good idea of what the game's going to be like. But yeah, you know, strange 2-hour delay and raining on at the end of the year, so it's kind of weird going in, but it's still a big league game, so you got a lot of adrenaline, and you know, there's some things you have to do, so you pitch well, and I was able to do that for the most part.
On a night where you're pitching like last night, I'm sure the answer is different, so tell us what you were doing during the 2-hour delay last night. But on a non-pitch night, what are you doing during a delay of 2 hours? That's a long time.
On a non-pitch night, a whole lot of nothing. Just kind of hanging out, wondering if we're going to play or not. It's kind of what you do. Yeah. You end up eating a lot, just sitting around, and the rain delays are pretty boring, though. They're pretty boring.
So, but for last night, you know, when did you know there was going to be a delay, and how does that affect your routine? I imagine one of the harder things, kind of underrated, would be getting up, getting ready, and then, nope, hold off, and now we got to ramp that process back up again. When did you know, and how does that affect your routine?
Yeah, you know, there wasn't like a final word or a, hey, we are going to be in a delay until probably a little after 6. I knew that they needed 45 minutes after they took the tarp off. So I knew I would have some time whenever that was. But, you know, it's kind of weird because when you start, you're pretty locked in all day, and you kind of have to turn it off for a little bit once you learned that there's going to be an hour or so that you have to wait, just because if you're trying to focus for that long, you'll be exhausted. So you kind of turn it off, stay loose, and then when you have an idea of when the game's going to start, you kind of lock it back in and get ready to go.
You were dealing there pretty much all night on a tough night for all hitters, for both lineups. You guys both, you imagine Chris Sale pitch for pitch. How did you feel when you came out of the game, and you know, did you feel like you could have gone more?
Yeah, I mean, we knew going in that was going to be at 90, just coming off. We went like, 78 last time, mm-hmm. coming off the IL, and so 90 was the number. And so I knew that was probably going to be enough, and I kind of settled in. The rain kind of stopped in, what, the third inning or so. And I think we both kind of settled in, and I got rolling there after the first. And I felt good. You know, my body's recovered well after taking 2 weeks off. And I think this stuff was probably a little better last night than it was the start before, which was kind of expected. So
does that mean in your next start, you can be back to 105 pitches, or do you stay at 90 now? What's kind of the timeline?
Yeah, I should be full go next start. I mean, what that ends up being pitch count wise, you know, you never don't really know going in. But I will be full go. There'll be no hard pitch count or anything going into the next one. So
how does the night where you mentioned it was raining, it was sprinkling on and on throughout, then there were times it was coming down even harder. How does that affect you on the mound in terms of grip and feel and everything? Do you have to tweak anything?
Yeah. When it's wet, you know, it's tough. You know, the mound gets wet. Obviously, everybody has to deal with this. And I do have a long stride, so that's usually interesting to deal with in the rain. So sometimes you got to shorten the stride a little bit, and then the ball gets wet. But, I mean, you can get a new ball pretty easy. So just understanding that it's going to be wet out there, and maybe shorten the stride a little bit and get the foot down a little earlier just so we don't slip.
Nats ace left-hander Mackenzie Gore is with us on Grant and Danny. Mac, I know you're not overly involved in monitoring all of this, all right? I get that. But I am just curious, as a guy who's one of the veterans and leaders in the clubhouse, you know, you guys are ongoing with your GM search right now. They're going to be a new executive running the show potentially this offseason and maybe a new manager. I'm just wondering what you kind of hope the future looks like for this team, and if you have any thoughts going into the offseason here of what this thing could and should look like moving forward in terms of bringing pieces in and getting active again as someone who's a mainstay and an important piece to this whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything starts from the top, so I think that's very important going into the offseason. I'm sure, you know, they're going to hire whoever they think the best fit is. As a player, I just want to, you know, get the most out of everybody in the clubhouse, and I think that starts from the front office, and I think that's something we haven't necessarily done the past few years. We've had guys have good years. I'm not saying that, but we just, you know, we haven't won enough games, and it's been frustrating. But we do have some really exciting players: James, CJ, Dylan. You know, Dalen's had a really nice rookie year, and there's some other. There's other pieces I'm leaving out, but we've got some guys that can play, and we just want to get the most out of this group. I think that's what the best teams do. No matter how much the player's making, they get the most out of that player. And right. I think that's something we have to figure out how to do here.
Yeah, maximizing potential, right? Like if everyone reaches their ceiling, it's a different looking ball club. Is there something specific? Is that a front office thing or a coaching thing? Like how do you guys actually do that?
I'm not sure what the answer is. I do know that unfortunately we didn't win enough games this year. And a lot of that is on the players. We are the ones out there. But we just got to figure out a way as a group to just be a little better. I wish I knew the answer, but I get paid to try to get people out, not to figure out what that answer is. So, but I do think that's something we need to do as a group, and it's on the players, but I think it's everybody. It's the whole organization. So
how has Sean Doolittle been able to work with you? A guy that, you know, most of the Nats fans remember pitching, it seems like 5-10 minutes ago. Now he's got like a pen in his hat, and he's, you know, Mr. Calming Presence on the mound, covering his mouth, letting, you know, no one know what he's saying. What's it like been working with him?
Yeah, me and Doo kind of built a great relationship. And it's been cool with him too, because he's kind of learning the coaching side as he's, you know, going into this year. he was just, it seemed like he did a great job last year, and he was even better this year. I've really enjoyed working with him. He's helped me a lot. I think he's, you know, a big part of the reason I've been able to make strides and continue to get better. So he's been great to have around, and he's really smart. And I think he's kind of the same way. He's going to continue to get better as a coach, and he seems like he really enjoys it.
Mackenzie Gore, ace of the Nationals on Grant and Danny. Mackenzie, we appreciate it, brother. Finish the season strong and look forward to catching up next week.
All right, will do.
That was The Leadoff, brought to you by The Window Man. Since 1989, The Window Man's been the educational window company. Get your free and home estimate or visit thewindowman.com's all-new Fairfax showroom. Big thanks to Mackenzie Gore, presented by Main Street Bank, all season long, every week, right here on Grant and Danny. Cheer local, bank local. Put their team in your office. Visit mstreetbank.com for more information. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser set to join us in just a couple minutes here on The Junks on an open line Thursday. It's brought to you by Window Nation. Searching for new windows and doors? Search windownation.com. Their windows are measured to fit the first time and installed by experts to last. Window Nation for your home, because it's where you live. You live in your home, Ricky. That's the way it works.
You think about the way that D.C. has transformed. We've seen it here.
Yes.
I don't know how many years we've worked here, but with Nationals Park.
It feels like we've worked here 100 years.
It's been a long time.
Eight or nine, maybe? Something in that?
I think you're right.
Something around there.
Peter from Burke would know.
Yeah, he would definitely know.
He knows the anniversary.
But, I mean, we used to be able to see the Capitol, and now we got all these high-rises. We used to park in a lot. There was just nothing but vacant lots around here.
Yep.
Everything is kind of popped up. But during Bowser's tenure, like, the wharf has transformed. The Nationals Park preceded her, I believe, but this area has transformed, and now she gets this to go along with the Capitals and Wizards staying.
When are they going to, have they already started, like, construction on kind of renovating the
Capital One?
I can't, you know, I'm not
they
down
did it
there.
Over the summer.
So, really? So, what are we going
to
do?
They're trying
notice?
To do the bulk of it over the summers.
Right.
Because obviously during the fall, it's, you know, the,
being used.
The Caps and the Wizards.
So, what did they do? Like, what will we notice?
You may not notice much.
I don't know. I don't
it's
know.
It's more
yet.
For the players, more amenities.
I think they were redoing the locker rooms. I could be wrong on that, but I thought that's what Jim Van Stone told us. They're doing a bunch of stuff.
Just ask him.
Fan experience. They're doing a lot of stuff over there.
What, you know, how are we going to notice? I go over there and have a great time.
I'll text JVS and ask him. He can get you updated on it.
Okay.
I haven't been there since they've done the renovations.
Right.
All right. Modern design and technology, increased capacity, amenities, improved accessibility.
I think they were expanding some of the clubs, the club level suites. I think they're expanding some of those.
Right.
I do like sitting on the club level if I'm privy to those seats. Yeah, it's a good deal.
I like that, but I kind of like it when Jim hooks us with those seats. They're just like right at eye level. Like it's you're just right there. You're like 15 rows up. That's like perfect.
Yeah.
And then, you know, anytime you get access to the little restaurant down below, whatever they call that.
So phase one included the installation of new team locker rooms.
Yeah.
But the fans will be able to see some of the updates after phase one is done, including new luxury suites.
Yeah.
The arena will go from having three levels of suites to eight.
Ooh. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's a lot
that's
of suites.
That's a lot.
There you
love
go.
That.
That's a lot.
That's a big expansion.
All right, so I think Valdez is talking to the mayor's PR person.
Oh, they're also changing the entrances.
Okay. That's one thing I will say. It's a little bit of a drag when you go to Caps Games. There's so much demand. There's so many people always there. It can take a little while to get in sometimes if you wait too late.
Oh, when you have sellouts and people want to see the product, it takes a little while to get in.
I'd like to increase that.
They're going to have more entrances to move people in and out with less crowding, including a new main entrance closer to the metro.
Love it.
Thank
it's
you.
Fantastic.
That is an issue.
It's a good thing.
You definitely don't do what I do and show up 10 minutes before the game starts or 20 minutes before the game starts. It can be a lot of people out there.
No, that's
a rookie circus.
That's a rookie move.
Yeah.
I always try to get there nice and early.
They also
get settled in.
They're doubling the amount of what they call vertical transportation. Those would be escalators and elevators.
You know, there are a lot of buzzwords
from
being
11
used.
To 22.
You're reading a lot of buzzwords.
How
not
can
really,
you do
tracking?
Would you say eight levels of club suites?
I think eight suites.
Oh, eight more suites.
No,
it said eight levels. It just might be different types of suites,
okay,
right?
Okay, three to eight.
So that there's different. Yeah. You know, there's the super fancy suites, and then the basic ones.
Gotcha.
Different tiers of
suites. Yeah, they were expanding those.
That's what I think they mean.
One of the last ones I went to, I can't even remember. It had to be a Caps game. It was a fancy. I would label it fancy ass suite.
Really?
That's how. I'm sure that Jim Van Stoden wouldn't do that. Yeah. He'd want a more proper name.
A fast.
Yes.
A fancy ass suite.
Let's head out now to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. We welcome in D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. Good morning, Mayor. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are you?
Hi.
We're doing well, but
congratulations.
We're not as good as you, the queen of D.C. sports, who is presiding over the Commanders coming back to their rightful spot in D.C. The deal passes yesterday with a vote of 11-2 by the council. Talk about how excited you are, how excited the residents are for this huge private investment, the biggest in the history of D.C., coming to the Anacostia Riverbanks?
Well, I think D.C. residents are excited. I think residents from around the region are excited, and certainly fans of the Commanders are looking forward to 2030 opening day to bring the Commanders back home.
Why was this so important to you?
Well, it's been important because we had 180 acres that have been at various stages of vacancy and blight, and now we're finally taking down the old RFK Stadium. And in a city our size, we need to make good use of that property. That's why we were excited to work with the Congress. James Comer from Kentucky has been very helpful to us in getting control of the land. And once we had that, we knew that we had the right partner in Josh Harris and the Commanders.
Did it frustrate you that some of the council members last minute tried to slide in some amendments that, you know, the Commanders are pushing back on? Ultimately, it didn't matter. The vote still came in.
I think it's standard, right? Yeah. I think it's standard.
Is that
they
just
do
standard politics at the end?
Well, it's unfortunate because, you know, I come from a world where a deal is a deal. We worked real hard on the agreement 6 weeks ago when they took their first vote. And I think to try to, you know, retrade is just not the way to do business. But, you know, that's water under the bridge, as they say. The votes came in, and it was, I think what's important to just relay is how good a deal it is for the city. We will activate those parcels faster to bring housing and parks and recreation because we have a partner that's bringing over $2 billion to the table.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Mayor, can you, I'm sorry because I haven't studied the plans, but can you tell, like, how close will, like, the restaurants and all of that, all the businesses you're bringing to that area, how close will that be to the actual stadium?
Oh, it will be right there. So in the 180 acres, think of the wharf times two. That's how much activity.
Right.
Actually, I think it's times three. Now I'm getting away from all the details myself. But it is can have a lot of economic activity. The Plaza District will be the entertainment district and be connected to the Festival Plaza. So think about that as the first entrance onto the campus, and then just behind that you'll have the stadium, which is kind of in the same location as the current stadium, and surrounding it you will have housing and hotels and parks and our recreation center, our sports complex.
Mayor Bowser, have they decided what the stadium is actually going to look like?
It's going to be beautiful, of course.
I hope so.
So I know that there is a kind of a great competition of ideas right now, looking at different designs. I've challenged the team to ensure that it's the best stadium in the nation. Of course, it will have a roof, so we can use it for most of the year. And, it, you know, it should be an award-winning design.
You don't know, though, if it's going to be just a throwback to all the traditional buildings that we have here or if it's going to be more modern or some sort of blend.
You know, I don't want to kind of get ahead of the ideas as they come in, but I think a kind of an ode to our classical architecture without being a replica, that to me would be interesting. But that's just, you know, I can't wait to see all of the ideas.
Do you have a say in it? Is that part of the deal or no?
No, the city is at the design table.
Nice.
Are you are you lobbying for a mayor's suite inside the stadium? That's what I would be doing if I were mayor. But I'm greedy. Oh, so
the city will have seats in the new stadium, that's for sure.
Very good. Excellent. As they should.
But it'll be ready by 2030, correct?
2030, if not sooner.
Okay.
And give Mendelsohn an obstructed view seat. If there's one in the house, give that one to him.
I should say this. When we say 2030, activity is already starting. Mm-hmm. Designers and planners and infrastructure folks were waiting for yesterday's vote to really get to work. So D.C. residents will begin to get trained. D.C. companies are going to start to get business. Because the work has to begin right now.
Where is it right now? Where does it stand? We heard about some beams being removed, and if you drive by the stadium, it looks like less is there. Where are we at with the taking down of the old stadium?
Well, we have what is called, and I'm new to this term, it's called a slow demolition, which is better for the site given the infrastructure that's there, including the metro and the surrounding community won't have like all the dust that would come with a big implosion. So it started at the beginning of this year and it's going to go through, I think, midpoint next year. But the big parts are starting to come down now. So when you look at it, you can literally look through the stadium. And with every day and every week, the site is going to begin to look a lot different.
Mayor Bowser, how does it work with the hotels and the retail stores, those companies, restaurants? Do they come to the city and say, all right, how much to get in on this? Or do you have to go out and look for them? How does that work?
Well, our deal has the Commanders being the commercial developer. So I expect that they are going to find a development partner. They bought on a real estate team so that, you know, Mark Klaus and all of the GM and everybody else, they're focused on a winning football team. And the real estate team can work with us on the development of the site. Mm-hmm. So just like we do with other development projects, we've partnered with the Commanders. They will get a developer, and that's how those parcels will come to be.
We talked about this earlier. I got to think that if you own a house or an apartment or a townhouse down there in that area, once this is all developed, I mean, your equity is going to skyrocket, I would think. Your property value is going to go up.
Well, we certainly expect that when we have more, you know, productivity, that values increase, which is why we've been focused as a city for many years on making sure that senior citizens are protected from that. In fact, all D.C. residents can see their equity go up, but the amount of their property taxes are capped from year to year. And senior citizens even have more of a tax cap. So you'll see equity increases, but you won't necessarily see your tax bill go up. And that's important to protect existing residents.
So what's next for you as the mayor as far as this project is, you know, as we're talking about this project? Do you just sit back now and watch it develop, or do you have to be involved roads, yeah, you know, all of the things?
Absolutely. Yeah. We're working double time. Keep in mind that we really wanted this approved in July, so we really feel like we have 2 months to make up for. So getting the right consultant teams on board for the planning, we have to take the commercial through zoning. So all of these things have to happen thoughtfully, but quickly, while keeping the community engaged.
Do you have to still then pass stuff with the city council? Said you have to still keep going to them to pass things?
No. We have, we put together a great plan. Now they're always, and the legislation has evolved over the last several weeks. So they're always different plans that we submit to the council, but the major approval is done.
How did you celebrate last night? Give us some insight on that.
Well, the downtown, the business improvement district was, you know, giving me an award for the work we've done in downtown. Nice. So I went there. Then I had a glass of champagne with my team. Excellent. And then I came on home because now I'm going to the Congress to testify. So it's a great day for D.C. And this is the real D.C. story, a city that is resilient, beautiful, growing, and, of course, the sports capital.
Right. All right. Well, we know you got to run. Thank you, Mayor. We appreciate it. Thanks for always coming on the
show.
Thank
you. Yep. That's
you bet.
Bye-bye. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. By the way, good luck running against her in the next reelection. She's basically the mayor for life. Like, she's brought the biggest private investment in the history of the city into D.C., and she's bringing the Commanders back. Mm-hmm. And she oversaw it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to run against her.
She got $2 billion.
$2.7 billion.
I know.
Yeah. She got more than that. She got a lot.
It's crazy.
She got a lot from the Commanders.
Finally done.
And the owners need they should be getting a lot of credit. Josh Harris.
Absolutely.
Ein, Rails.
Mm-hmm. Magic.
Yeah. All, Johnson. All
sure.
All of them.
Sure.
But they made this thing happen.
They definitely did.
And right. The previous guy couldn't.
Man, well,
and
I
he
wish,
was trying.
Wish we had 0.00, put another 30 zeros, 1% equity in the Commanders. Because we saw the Forbes ranking. They're already valued at over $7.5 billion.
Is that what they're saying?
And they were just purchased for $6.05 billion. Was that 2 years ago? And a half years ago?
Yeah.
It's only going to keep going up.
And the ownership group's fired up. I don't know what his job title is there, but your boy Gabe, was texting us last night.
Yep.
The brother of Josh Harris, Gabe Harris, who Jason worked with years ago.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Did you work for him or just with him?
I just worked. I was an intern, so I worked. I worked for everybody, but I wasn't in his department. No.
Gotcha.
He's a good dude, though.
All right, when we come back, we got a big decision to make. We are going to put our heads together and figure out, are we going to take the Buffalo Bills in Survivor?
Or somebody else.
Or another team. We will strategize and try to survive into week 4 of the Circus Survivor Contest. We'll discuss our pick next here on The Fan.
P. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Wanted to kind of talk about the process of getting this RFK thing over the hump, man, and into the done deal category. My friend Joe Maloney used to work for, I don't know, I think Maloney might have worked for the Redskins, then the football team, and the Commanders. I don't know your exact timeline when you worked for the team. Did you work for all three names? Were you hired by the Redskins?
Only saw two names, the team, the football team, and the Commanders.
Okay. All right. So our friend Joe Maloney now works at the American Gaming Association, but worked for the Washington organization under various names. Yo, it was so funny. Preston Smith back in the locker room yesterday. He's like, yeah, you know, I wasn't here for the identity crisis. It just made me laugh so much. But all right. So Joe, when you were working for the team, you had what I imagine was an incredibly difficult task of trying to get the RFK thing on track with politicians that wanted nothing to do with the owner of the organization. What's it like for you to see this thing, what appears to me anyway, through the finish line?
Thanks for the question. Great to be on. I'm immensely proud to have played a role. The stadium search and the RFK effort, it's probably 10 years old, right? It goes back to about 2015 when, believe it or not, Bruce and Dan were roaming the halls of the Wilson building trying to get
Oh, dude, I got a one-on-one with Bruce on Freedom Plaza after he went to City Hall, and they just thought they'd waltz in there and get it done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I was part of the club for 3 years, so I guess you could say I've owned basically a third, if you will, of this stadium exercise. So, yeah, I'm super happy to have been a part of it and played a very, very small role. But, you know, JP, to your point, the only reason this happens is because of two people. It's Muriel Bowser and Josh Harris, right? Full stop. And this mayor has proven enormously competent at getting big deals like this done. And Josh is, in effect, the savior for this franchise and for this region. And it's just super, it's super excited. As happy as I am to play a small role, I'm just particularly just happy for the fans. I mean, just hearing you talk about what the experience is going to be like for you when that day comes, what it'll be like for B. Mitch, who I know is not on the show today, but for the legends that played on that turf and on those grounds, it's just going to be a spectacular moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's not overly simplified to say selling the team was the largest hurdle. Did you see that as soon as the team was sold to Josh Harris that this was probably an inevitability, just the timeline was the last thing in the air?
Yeah, I've always been asked, well, what's the low point of my experience, like when I was with the club? And it was, I think JP was like week two or week three in 2022, and Sarver had just been kicked out of the NBA. And I think in that moment, I knew the stadium deal wasn't going to happen. Just wasn't. Like, I remember talking to Nicky Javala in the back of the press box after that game. That was, of course, the Wentz threw an interception at the goal line game. And just knew at that point, like, it was done. I was updating the resume later that night, right? And then 3 weeks later, Dan and Tanya announced an intent to sell, and Jason and I sat in room, then team president Jason Wright, and just we had nothing else to do other than go for broke on the stadium stuff. And that's when we just went into turbocharge mode, because to your question, it's anybody but Dan was going to significantly just boost momentum. And when it became very obvious in the spring of 23 that it was going to be, you know, a Josh Harris and a homegrown native investment group was going to come together, it just, everybody wanted to be a part of this, whether no matter the jurisdiction, but obviously RFK was going to eventually, you know, be a front runner, just given the emotional and the spiritual ties. So it truly, truly, it's Josh Harris and Miro Bowser, period, full stop.
Yeah. Remember which local reporter was first to tell you Harris was going to get the team when everybody was talking about Bezos. Talking with our friend Joe Maloney here. He's at American Gaming Association now, used to work for the Commanders, really tried to kickstart this effort to get back to RFK when the going was very rough. I want to, for a lot of fans, you know, they voted on this thing. Then they had to vote again. Now it seems done. The team put out a statement. How much more procedural stuff is there? And, like, what, if any, hurdles still remain?
Yeah, there's a ton left to do, but Lanville can rest easy. Lanville can rest easy. There will not be another public vote or public referendum on this in any form. The work that gets done now is regulatory in nature. It's environmental in nature. It's permitting. It's entitlement. It's deeding. It's engineering. There will be a public input process that will take place in and around the site and the communities that are there. You know, there's advisory neighborhood commissions, ANCs, as they're referred to in DC, that will have input into the process, and the team will lead that and shepherd that alongside the city. So there's so much that you will hear about, but this deal is done, and this stadium is going to get built. Ground will be broken, and the process will begin. But just know that the process moving forward, it just becomes very tedious, very expensive. But, you know, politics is ultimately an exercise in how and when you decide to deploy political capital for the purposes of achieving an objective. That work is done. The objective has been achieved, and the Commanders are coming back.
How legit is 2030 to you?
I think that's going to be super hard. And I think the league was right to be very clear about its deadlines on council consideration. When the then DC United ownership and the DC council and the mayor came to an agreement on Audi Field, that was sent to the DC council in June of that year. That deal did not get done until the following December, JP. So they sat on that for 18 months. And so I think the Commanders were particularly clear about expectations around timing in order to be competitive for some of the stuff you guys were talking about in the previous segment. There's major events, and these major events, they run very, very stringent and disciplined selection criteria and selection processes. And so if you want to be in the mix for 2031 Women's World Cup, all of the sort of hyperventilating around getting this deal done so you can be in position to win those types of events at your stadium, that was all very real. And so they're gonna be putting a shovel in the ground as soon as possible. But I do think it's going to be really, really hard.
I think the only example out there of a stadium getting built on an absurd timeline was Allegiant Stadium, and I think they did that in just under 4 years. The standard timeline to achieve something of this size and this scale is certainly in the 4 to 5 year range. So we're super close. We got to move quick.
Allegiant is also Vegas, and they just get stuff done and like don't have. I feel like looking at Vegas versus anything else is like, I mean, SoFi. Now, granted, they had mudslides or whatever. That took a while. I feared you would say 2030 seems hard, but I also kind of deep down knew that. You know what I mean? Like, it's, right. I don't know, middle of September of 2025. Like, yeah. They got a lot to do. How excited are you just on somebody that worked in the trenches on this thing and now know what's going to happen?
I was hearing you talk about what it's going to feel like when you bring your daughters. And, you know, I play that scenario a lot in my head, JP. And I got to remind everybody, I didn't grow up here, right? I went to RFK when the Nats came back for that magical 2005 summer, and that was a ton of fun. That informs how I think about what my experience will be like. And I live in Bethesda. Like, we're going to go drive to Bethesda Metro on a Sunday morning. We're going to park there. We're going to take the train to Union Station. And I just always imagine a beautiful fall day, and I'm walking down East Capitol from Union Station. It's a 45-minute walk. And it's going to be euphoric. People are going to be pouring out of their homes on Capitol Hill. And you are going to walk across that massive greenway that they're going to build leading up to the stadium as you pass the armory on your right. And it's going to be this awe-inspiring structure. And you're going to turn around and you're going to look down East Capitol and you're going to see a sea of humanity following you in burgundy and gold. And I just get chills thinking about it. And I just simply cannot imagine what it will feel like to be somebody like you or somebody like B. Mitch that will have that moment as well. It's just going to be magical. It truly will be. And I think, look, I respect the folks like Landfill and others that like don't feel that. But if there's one thing I truly felt in my job and my responsibility, just simply because of where I am right now in life, I'm a 45-year-old with kids that, you know, and I'm on soccer fields and I'm at preschool drop-offs and everything. And if you are any individual over the age of 35 that grew up with this team and saw this era of glory back in the 80s and 90s, like that's what this means to you. And for those that are under the age of 35 and just didn't quite have that and have only known malaise with this, the first half of their fandom with this franchise, like it's okay to feel that way. But I can assure you that this structure and the environment that they'll create, and to what you said earlier in the segment, like this ownership doesn't miss, that's going to continue, and it will feel that great for everybody.
Yeah, man. Well said. Dude, are people chilling out with the social media attacking players and stuff? I know that was a priority for you guys, and we were trying to – if you lose a bet or a player prop, don't go tweeting at the player and be a jerk.
Yeah, thanks for the partnership that we had over the course of the first 2 weeks as the NFL season kicked off. I don't know the answer to that question yet. And obviously as a society right now, we're experiencing a lot, right? And we just need to stop reacting in real time on social media. We need to touch grass. And we need to realize that, whether it's the result of a bet or, you know, what some elected official may or may not have said yesterday at a hearing for a stadium, like we all just need to take a bead, right? And, you know, what we're just trying to achieve is just to remind folks, athletes don't care about the result of your bet. You know, the analogy I make is like I play a lot of golf, and when I'm done playing golf and I walk into the pro shop, the pro sitting there, he or she does not care that I almost chipped in on 16. Just don't. They don't care. They literally don't care. So,
accurate.
Look, you miss a parlay. That athlete online really does not care. So just trying to remind folks, keep it cool. And like I said, we appreciate the partnership and just encourage folks to bet legally should they decide to get in on the action this year.
Be cool, fool. They don't want to roll up. Thank you for the time, Joe. Appreciate you, man. Thank you. And take congrats, care, dude. Take a little ownership of that.
Appreciate you guys. Have a great day.
All right. Joe Maloney, I mean, imagine having your hands in the dirt trying to sell politicians on dealing with Dan. You know how hard that is?
That's an incredibly hard job. It's funny, though. He was talking about walking down and there being that burgundy and gold just crowd. That's kind of what I was thinking. He just voiced it. And you get chills thinking about that. Where when's the last time in downtown D.C. that you've seen just a large group of burgundy and gold?
Hell yeah.
Junkies coming to you live from the MedStar Capitals Iceplex training home of the Washington Capitals. Very happy to be joined by the NHL's all-time goal-scoring leader, Alex Ovechkin, sitting to my right. What's up, Alex?
What's
Thanks
up,
for
man?
Joining us, man.
Thank
Appreciate
you for
it.
Me,
by the way, first and foremost, happy 40th birthday. I'm going to make it a little weird here, if that's okay. I got you a present. I got you a gift. People love gifts on their birthday.
Nice.
So I got you some vodka.
This is weird, though.
There's no
this
Stella.
Is weird.
It's not Stella.
It's
Stella.
It's okay. It's Japanese vodka. It's not from your homeland, but yeah, that's a nice
would poke. You Would you drink Japanese vodka?
I have, no. I have
no.
A new experience.
What's that, the worm one? What it calls? The worm.
Can you, yeah, put it up
there. There
you
go.
Yeah, the worm one. It's a warm drink.
Uh-huh. Oh, the sake? Sake.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
Right.
Yeah. So how was your summer? Yeah. How was coming back, acclimating back to training camp, media day, getting ready for the season to ramp up?
Yeah, summer was good. Spent time with the family, training, lots of stuff going on. And, yeah, it was a busy summer, but it was summer went fast. So happy to be back, happy to be back on the ice, and it's
did you go to the beach?
We went to Turkey for 1 month.
Oh, Turkey.
Yeah.
Wow.
So all family, friends, it was a pretty cool time.
I don't know anything about Turkey. Like, what's the best thing to do
fill
in
us
Turkey
in.
Yeah, it's just a resort. You go over there, it's a 5-star hotel.
Perfect.
Oh, of course.
Kids loving there. They have a kids club. For us, it's chilling, volleyball, great food, good company, so you just chill and relax.
Yeah, what's the deal with volleyball? I've seen a lot of clips of you playing volleyball.
He loves it.
Yeah, we have a sort of kind of community. Like, I have a group chat in my phone, and, you know, like, who's playing, who's not, lineups. Yeah, it's a battle out there. It's almost goes to the fight.
Oh, yeah, nice.
See, now that you're 40.
How long after the season do you start working out again? Do you take about a month off?
Yeah, so as soon as I go back home to Moscow, it was May 20th, and 7th of June we went to Turkey, come back
early July.
July 7th, and July 8th.
Start working out again.
Start working out.
Now that you're 40. Pickleball might be the sport for you. Just get into it, try it out. Have you
pickleball?
Have you?
No, not yet.
Okay, maybe that's when you're 50. Maybe another decade.
50, yeah, maybe.
You haven't there's a clip of you that's famous of you on the golf course when you first came to DC and you had a hole in one, right? That's true story, right? Have you adopted it since?
No, we have some couple tournaments, not tournaments like all the team played, but.
But you're obviously a natural.
Never get into that game yet. So I know lots of hockey players love that game, but I'm not I can watch some, maybe like some famous players, but I'm not a big fan. I have hole in one, that's all.
Amazing.
That's more than I have.
We're joined by Alex Ovechkin from the Washington Capitals. Before we talk about this upcoming season, let's rewind to last season. That amazing day on Long Island when you broke Wayne Gretzky's record.
And he was there.
I was lucky enough to get tickets. I was there with my family. It was amazing to see you break that hallowed record. Take us through that day. Is it still a blur at this point, looking back on it? And is it a relief mentally to have that behind you, that people aren't going to be asking you every day, you know, while you're at your locker, hey, you're going to break Gretzky's record today or tonight?
Yeah, of course it was a relief, obviously, not for me, but for all organization and for my teammates, and because you get questions every day, myself and for boys, and you know, I'm pretty sure they was tired about it, and you know, they was kind of happy for me as well. Get through that. It was
regular routine game, you know. Of course, it was lots of media, lots of attention in the warm-ups. When we went to ice warm-up, it was an hour and a half was sold, you know, sold out. And yeah, it was, yeah, the atmosphere was great. And, you know, when we played against Chicago, and when I tied Gretzky, it was the same atmosphere, you know, lots of media. Fans, so it was crazy, and you know, it was a crazy couple of days.
Are you looking forward to this season though, and not having any of that attention? Just go out there and just play hockey.
Yeah, of course. You know, I'm pretty sure right now, like, attention is going to be on how the Caps going to do it this year. You know, pressure on us, obviously, because we have a great last year. Successful year, season, but in the playoffs, I'm pretty sure, like, if we get a little luck and not a couple injuries, we'll be fighting for a cup. But you know, for me personally, like, right now it's time to get ready for a season. We still have like 2 to 3 weeks, whatever. You know, first training camp, you know, obviously, always nice to be back and you know, feel the ice, feel the puck, and, you know, get some dust on your shoulders.
How has the roster changed? You guys didn't make a lot of changes.
No.
Made a couple small additions.
Yeah, but I'll be honest with you, like, it doesn't matter who you are. You just have to play hard and be able to compete against different teams.
Right.
Were you surprised that you're still able to be as effective as you are this late in your career?
You know, like, I'm always saying, like, I'm here to help team to win, and obviously my job to create the moment, you know, score goals, whatever, make it, hits, and you know, I'm going to do my best. I'm going to enjoy it, and you know, yeah.
You know, LeBron stuck around until Bronny made it to the league. Sergei obviously looks like he's going to be a beast.
No.
He's shooting that down immediately. Yeah. let me ask you, Alex. How nice is it now? It's a luxury that in years past, people would be like, Alex has to carry the scoring load for the Washington Capitals. He has to score 45, 50, or more goals. Now you look up and down the roster. Last year alone, you had 7 guys who had 20 goals or more on this team. What's that like, just having a nice surrounding cast around you that you know that, hey, I don't have to go out and score 2 or 3 goals tonight for us to have a chance to win?
Yeah, it's great that we you can see how the young players growing up, you know. I'm pretty sure lots of players are going to have a great year this year. Obviously, Leonard come to the lineup, and you know, he have that experience, playoff experience. It's going to help him in the future for sure. Mike Michaels, Sam Protas, you know, lots of guys going to take a big step, and they're going to be our leaders.
By the way, what's up with the Protas brothers still growing? Like, they're 6'5 and 6'6, and they just keep sprouting up. I'm 5'9. I feel like I'm robbed over here.
You know, when you're from Belarus, you have to eat potatoes.
Is that what it is? That's the secret sauce?
Yeah, potato, yeah.
Unbelievable what those guys are doing.
It's their secret.
Hey, did you drive the Bentley today?
Yep.
Did you see it in the parking lot?
Can I just take it around the block?
Do you have insurance?
I'm a good driver. Of course I have insurance. Yeah.
Car insurance.
Oh, yeah.
I do. Gotta be insured. Yeah, yeah. Hey, Ovi, in a hypothetical world, we know that your favorite meal before a game is a chicken parm. If a chicken parm did not exist, what's your backup go-to meal?
Steak.
Steak, okay. Yeah. What meat? Are you a medium rare guy?
Medium rare, yeah.
Medium rare, okay, good. Very good.
Yeah. Steak and obviously spaghetti, it's 100%.
Very good.
Very good.
Well, no fish. You're not a fish guy?
No.
Sea bass, halibut?
No, I know lots of guys love to eat fish before the game, but no, I like to have a chicken or chicken parm, and if not chicken parm, steak.
Hey, we know that your teammate, Chicky, he has a lot of weird, like, eating habits. Have any of those rubbed off on you, or are you just steering clear of that?
No, obviously, I understand why he loved that, and you know, he loved like the rare. Like, sometimes I cook the meat and I send him a picture, and he said, like, "Oh, it's unbelievable!" Like, yeah, and but yeah, he's
he's a guy who have his own mind, and you know, everybody's different, right? So you can tell like what he's doing, like you can eat this or you cannot eat that. So
who's the worst eater? Who's the pickiest?
The pickiest?
Yeah.
I know the one guy, like, I'm not going to tell tell his name, but he's always eat the same food.
Like chicken fingers or just something like an 8-year-old would eat?
No.
Healthy, maybe.
Healthy.
Like Brooks Like was like that,
he's
right?
He's boring.
Brooks Like...
I thought he was a healthy guy, only healthy stuff.
Yeah, when he was retired, maybe, but... No, it was not when he was a player.
Nice.
Hey, you're a beer guy. These guys give me crap for having 2 or 3 beers before bed every night. Now, obviously, I'm not an elite athlete like you, but 2 or 3 beers before bed, that's not a bad thing, is it?
Right before bed?
Yeah, right before bed. Like right before bed. You wouldn't recommend that?
No, bad?
No, that's bad.
Right before bed.
That's a bad deal.
What, just around dinner?
Around dinner, yeah.
Dinner, okay. You're
not Stella?
Okay.
Whatever they want.
Yeah,
whatever you guys want.
It's all good.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you, we appreciate the time. Best
thank
of luck
you guys.
In the upcoming season. We appreciate you taking some time to spend
you.
With us.
Thank you guys.
Appreciate it.
That's Alex Ovechkin, your all-time NHL goal-scoring leader from the Washington Capitals here at the MedStar Capitals Iceplex with the Junks.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you know
Browns
why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.